gone through life telling myself that I just have a bad memory.
We could turn this into a little masterclass.
Go ahead.
So the three keys to a better memory are...
I've been thinking a lot about this in the book that I've been writing coming out soon called The Diary of a CEO, 33 Laws for Business and Life. And in chapter one, which is law one of the book, I was playing around with this idea of knowledge and skills and all of these things and the relationship they have between them. And really it was trying to find advice for young people that want to get to a point where they have reputation and a big network and lots of resources, right? Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out the order. So I almost visualized it like five buckets. And the first bucket I wrote down is knowledge. That's the first one, right? And these are sequential buckets. So they go from, you know, this is bucket one. And then once you fill that bucket, when you apply knowledge, it turns into a skill. Mm. And then once you have knowledge and applied knowledge, which I call skill, then you'll get these other things. Then you'll get resources, you'll get a network, and you'll get a reputation. But it's those first two buckets. You can't have skills without knowledge, really. And knowledge is certainly the first one, but just having knowledge alone without that applied skill, without that applied knowledge, which we call a skill, you'll never get the reputation, the resources, and the network. And the only two buckets that no one ever can take from you, the only two buckets that anyone can never unfill, is the knowledge bucket. And also the skill bucket. Yeah. People can take away your reputation, they can take away your resources, they can take away your network, but they can never unfill these two buckets. And these two buckets are the first two buckets which go on to fill the other three. And that's why I think more recently in my life, I've become obsessed with learning. Am I a great learner? No. I don't think I am. Because I sit here, you know, I sit here with the greatest minds in the world and I remember very little of it. And it's funny, as you were saying, I was like, I've been thinking this over the last couple of weeks. I've never really shared this with anybody. But I thought, gosh, you're in such a privileged position to get to meet all these incredible people. I should be like a human encyclopedia of information and wisdom. And I don't think I am. You know, I meet people that are. I sit here with them. I think you're one of them. I go, this guy knows everything and he's remembered everything and he knows the names of studies and he can recall names. I can barely recall names of people. So I'm like, where do I start? Because look, I'm in a privileged position meeting all these wonderful people, and our listeners are too. If anyone's, you know, loyal to this podcast, you're like me. I actually wrote something down as you're speaking. I was thinking, what we need to do here at The Diary of a CEO after the episode ends is we need to set the audience some homework.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is say, okay, Jim said these three core ideas. After the episode, I want you to go and implement them. And then I want you to like tag me on social media of you implementing them, the action after the episode, and share it with me. And that's what I think we should all do, because then not only are we going to listen, we're going to learn. And those are two very different things.
Yeah. And I feel also when we teach something, we get to learn it twice, meaning you share that with your friends, your family, your followers, your fans. It takes advantage of something called the explanation effect. The explanation effect says that when you learn something with the intention of explaining it to somebody else, you're going to learn it much better. And that's kind of obvious, right? Mm-hmm. If we talked about speed reading or the best brain foods or changing your habits, optimizing your sleep, the kind of things that we specialize in, and somebody listening had to give a TEDx talk about it the following week, would they focus better?
100%.
They would have a better concentration. Would they take more notes? Would they post more questions online? Right, they would own that information. And so I think that learning with the intention of teaching helps you to be able to certainly learn it better. I mean, that's even how you could even use, you could explain it to somebody. I mean, the whole Richard Feynman method was, you know, take this difficult subject, neuroscience, quantum fit, whatever it happens to be, like social media marketing, AI, and explain it to me as if I am a six-year-old, you know, right? And that can, you know, and I can open up a whole thing with this conversation in terms of artificial intelligence, you know, and creatives. But I really feel like all these tools are there to augment. I don't even think it's artificial intelligence. For me, it's obviously machine learning, but it's augmented intelligence. And I'm thinking like, how do I use this tool, like I would use a book or a computer or the internet, whatever, to AI to enhance HI, like human intelligence? I'm very interested in that.
Me and you know the Feynman technique well, but when I came across it, it really was a game changer for me, because it explained why I have good comprehension on certain subject matter and then I'm quite loose on others. Could you explain it in a simple way? I know you have a version of it in the book, but for anybody that isn't aware of that technique.
So the idea here is anyone can make things more complex, but the idea is when you really understand something, you could simplify it in a way that makes it usable for the end result, right? And not only the end result, but the process of learning it. So meaning, I love reading the neuroscience papers and having deep conversations. And I think where if we've had any level of success is translating that in a way to people where it's conversational, where they see the relevance in their daily lives, in the application, and it's results oriented.
And how does that impact our ability to learn the subject, this Fryman technique? Because stage one is of the Fryman technique, from what I remember, is you learn something. Mm-hmm. And then stage two is, I believe you simplify it and then you share it. And then if you can't share it to the six-year-old, you go back to learning it.
Right. And that's a great synopsis of it. And I would say that, so how it builds, so every single time you have a new, there's a Oliver Wendell Holmes quote that says, a person's mind, once stretched by a new idea, never regains its original dimensions. And so when we have, so neuroplasticity happens when we experience novelty. So we learn a new idea or something happens in our environment. It's neuroplasticity allows learning, it allows adaptation, it even allows recovery from traumatic brain injury. Right? I had these deficiencies, if we call them that, and I was able to compensate by creating workarounds, like somebody would do in some kind of program, you know, and then you start building paths. Another way of neuroplasticity, it's kind of like if I walked through a field and there are lots of bushes, you know, I walked through it once and I didn't know, not much changes, but if you take that path and you reinforce it through repetition, or space repetition, interval training, then all of a sudden it becomes more of a path and eventually it becomes a road and it becomes a highway. And we've made that connection. So I like pulling on things that are natural as metaphors, but we learn through metaphors because all of learning is taking something you don't know and connecting it to something you do know.
People say learning is repetition though. They just say, say it loads. Mm. Does that work?
It does, but when we're looking at methodology, repetition, the problem with repetition, and certainly it gets a result, it's rote learning. It's like when the churches started universities and how people would teach would be the teacher or professor would say a fact to the class and the class would repeat it. And then the teacher would say it again and the class would repeat it. And so I'm making on video, if you're watching this, a circular motion. Like a rotary club, their symbol is a wheel. The first half of the wheel is the teacher saying the fact. The second half of the wheel is the class repeating the fact. And you do that 50 times and then you build that pathway and you have quote unquote learning. The problem with that is it takes so much time. And now we live in an age where the amount of information, it's like doubling at dizzying speed, right? There's more information today in a newspaper than somebody in the 17th century ever came across in their whole life, right? I mean, you think about also blogs and social media and podcasts, it's just like, it's overwhelming. So we can't be learning the same ways.
Okay, so I've got a book coming out, as I said, mm-hmm. and there's 33 laws. And I've been saying to myself, listen, you're gonna at some point start really promoting this book. So you need to memorize all 33 laws.
Yeah.
Like, I actually don't need to,
dude.
I mean, so I need to, mm-hmm. fucking hell, what am I doing with my life? These 33 laws, I need to remember basically what the law is and then the gist of it.
Yeah.
How would you help me do that?
I could do that in a heartbeat.
Okay, all right,
so let's turn this into coaching. And we could use just content that everyone could relate to, because I don't know how much of the laws you want to share or how much you have
I don't mind sharing
on tap.
Them.
The method I'm going to share with you, I call it PIE, P-I-E. That three ingredients for a better memory, P stands for place. We remember things based on where we put it. Like you put your keys in a certain spot each time you're always going to find it because it's organized, mm-hmm. right? You forget someone's name, you ask yourself, where do I know the person? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the context gives you the content. So that's a place to store the information. The I is imagine. We remember things better that we could see and imagine. Mm-hmm. Meaning, I bet as difficult as names are to remember, you remember faces.
Yeah.
So many people remember faces because more of your brain is dedicated towards your visual cortex. It takes up more real estate. So we tend to remember things we see better than what we hear.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the face and you go to someone, I remember your face, but I forgot your
name.
That's
me every day of my
life.
You
never go to somebody say the opposite. You never go say, I remember your name, but I forgot your face.
I roll up to people and say, hi, nice to see you. And then I realize I didn't remember their name.
We're going to help you with that. Okay, so here we go. So the eye is imagined. We tend to remember what we see. There's a proverb that says, what you hear, you forget. What you see, you remember. What you do, you understand. What you hear, you forget. You heard the name, you forgot it.
Yep.
What you see, you remember. You saw the face, you remember the face. So what you could see, and we think in pictures. When you get on an airplane, no longer does it say, no smoking, fasten your seatbelts. There's just pictures. And we think in pictures. A picture is worth 1,000 words. So you want to imagine those pictures. And the E and pi entwine. Entwine is where you're connecting. Entwine means to associate or to connect. And what are you connecting? The P and the I, the place in the image. So let me give you an example.
5 buckets.
What?
Law number one.
Right. Yeah.
The 5 buckets.
And we could do the 5 buckets also. I was going to teach people quickly 10 things that they could do to upgrade their brain.
Let's do your 10 things.
But certainly we could apply this towards buckets too. All right. So we're blessed that the book was heavily endorsed by like the Cleveland Clinic Center for Brain Health, the founding director there, one of the top Alzheimer's research out of Harvard, Dr. Rudy Tanzi. And when I speak at these organizations, we know that about 1/3 of your brain performance, your memory, is predetermined by genetics. 2/3 is in your control. They say the metaphor is that, for example, Alzheimer's, and this is like we donated a lot of the proceeds to Alzheimer's research for our book, is in memory of my grandmother. They say that your genetics will load the gun, but your lifestyle will fire it, right? Kind of makes sense. And it's not like all metaphors, they're not absolutes, but this is an idea to connect something you don't know to something you know. So going to this, 2/3, I'm gonna give everybody right now the 10 keys, as you know it in the book, but I'm gonna show you how to memorize them. But what I liked it to do, whether or not people memorize them or not, and I find that people will be able to do it pretty easily and effortlessly, is at least rate yourself 0 to 10. How much energy and effort and attention are you putting towards this area? Because everyone wants to know the one thing they could do for an incredible memory. There's just not. There's not a magic pill, but there is a process, right? So we'll go through them fast. Number one, good brain diet. So everyone, on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being the best, how much energy, attention, time are you putting towards a good brain diet? So there's certain foods that are very neuroprotective. And I would also say, I'm not a doctor or nutritionist. Everyone's bio-individual. So do allergy testing, do functional medicine testing in terms of a microbiome test, a nutrient profile, food sensitivity. So everyone's a little different. In general, some of my favorite brain foods, avocados, the monounsaturated fat is good for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Blueberries, I like to call them brain berries, very neuroprotective. Broccoli, good for your brain. Olive oil, good for the brain. If your diet allows, eggs. The choline in eggs is good for your cognitive health. Green leafy vegetables, like kale and spinach. And now again, some people are allergic to kale, so that wouldn't be for you. Another one, I would say wild sardines or like wild salmon or sardines. Like your brain is mostly fat, so those fish oils. Turmeric is a great brain food, meaning it helps to lower inflammation. You could use that while you're cooking. Walnuts.
Everybody's just waiting for you to say chocolate here,
yeah,
Jim.
There you go. Walnuts and dark chocolate. Dark chocolate, not milk chocolate. So those are some of the brain foods. So 0 to 10. On the other side, that's not so good, processed, you know, thing, foods, high sugar.
What does it do to the brain?
So sugar is highly addictive, right? You've had guests on here probably talking about how it's more addictive than a lot of drugs, mm-hmm. right? There's certain things that are not good for the brain. And again, people like we've had on our podcast or we've interviewed for the book, like people like Dr. Mark Hyman, Dr. Daniel Amen, you know, sugar, alcohol, marijuana, certain things like alcohol could, some people say they use it to help them sleep, but there's a difference between getting knocked out and actually getting good deep sleep, getting good REM sleep. Sleep is just a personal focus of mine. But sugar is highly addictive, not good. A lot of people are also hyper, you know, the ADHD, the hyper behavior. A lot of times you could eliminate sugar. But in the U.S. schools, it's tough. You know, they even having vending machines there with all the pop and the sodas and the, you know, and just, yeah. But to get through the list, 0 to 10, how good's your diet? Number two, and I'll go through these fast, killing ants. Killing ants is actually clinically proven to be good for your brain. Ants, I get this from Dr. Daniel Amen, automatic negative thoughts. Remember we talked about the power of your thoughts and just keeping it, in, even if you say I don't have a great memory, just add a little word like yet at the end. It just changes, you know, the potentiality of that statement. So in 0 to 10, how encouraging, optimistic are your thoughts and your beliefs? Number three, in no specific order again, is exercise.
Okay.
There's so much research talking about the power of movement and the brain. When you move, by the way, studies show that when you listen to your podcast, when people are listening to this podcast and they happen to be doing something rhythmic, going for a nice walk with the dogs or on an elliptical, they'll actually understand the information and retain it better. When your body moves, your brain grooves. Just remember that. When your body moves, your brain grooves. When you move your body, you create brain-derived neurotrophic factors, BDNF, which is like fertilizer for the brain. It's like fertilizer promoting neuroplasticity. Number four, brain nutrients. And this is, I always prefer people get it from whole, you know, their own foods. But, you know, again, you could get so much data nowadays. You could do a nutrient profile because if your vitamin D levels are low, you're not going to perform, your brain's not going to perform at its best. You know, if you're not getting your omega-3s, your brain is mostly, you know, made out of fat, your DHAs, your vitamin C, your vitamin Bs.
Everyone comes here and talks to me about bloody vitamin D and omega-3.
Yeah.
Everybody says the same two things. Supplements work for that, right? Do supplements work for vitamin D?
Quality supplements.
Yeah.
You know, I would, again, prefer people get it from sunlight and prefer people get it from natural sources, like eating fish or whatever.
Damn, I don't go out in the sunlight enough. I need to fix that.
Yeah. You've had guests talking about the power of sunlight first thing in the morning to reset their circadian rhythm to help them sleep. You know, for me in the morning, I try to get the elements in my life. So I think about thousands of years ago, they thought the four elements made everything up that you see. So it's like, you know, in Babylonian times, in Greek times, you know, the four elements of air, water, fire, and earth. And so, like, I don't know, I take this approach in the morning where you don't have to biohack everything. You can do it for free. Go out there, outside, you know, get some earth, get your feet on the ground, right? Really simple to do, to feel more grounded and more connected. And there's also, and I think in energetic, people talk about pulse electromagnetic fields and everything, but I don't know, I feel more grounded when I just walk in the grass. Simple thing people could do. And then I'm thinking about air. I could do my deep breathing, or some people do fire breathing, alpha breathing, Wim Hof breathing, first thing in the morning, clear the cobwebs of the night. And then some water, drink some water or take your cold shower. You get to integrate it, however, whatever your morning routine is. And then fire is the sunlight for me, you know, first thing in the morning. But I just find that any of the biohacking stuff, and people follow me on Instagram, well, you know, I have my toys and everything else. They're just to mimic nature, you know, a lot of the times, you know, the red lights and the cold plunges and all that stuff.
Nature. Point number five is a clean environment.
Yeah. So after brain nutrients, 0 to 10, rating yourself, 5 is a clean environment. And this is for everything, and including the quality of the air that you're breathing. Some, you know, like I had somebody on our podcast talking about the neurotoxins in brand new carpets or furniture, you know, in terms of what they're sprayed with, and the off-gassing that comes from it, and how it could have a toxic effect, you know, on your brain.
You wrote air pollution is a massive and underrated health risk. They cause up to 30% of all strokes. Life expectancy is appreciably lower in cities than in the countryside, even accounting for differences in wealth and lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, we sorted through a number of research, you know, talking about air pollution, water pollution also as well, you know, in terms of the certain residues that happens to be in whether it's in tap water or what have you, or some people are concerned about plastics that come from bottles also as well. And other people are concerned about, we've had a couple of episodes talk about EMFs, you know, just the...
How does that impact my brain though?
I don't think we know. You know, all I know is that the brain hasn't changed a lot in the past 100,000 years, but technology certainly has. And, you know, and we talk about, you know, these videos that we make, about morning routine and evening routines at millions of views, just simple things like don't touch your phone the first 30 minutes of the day or the last 30 minutes of the day. Something so simple.
And then seven's brain protection.
Brain protection. So clean environment, even just cleaning your desktop, you know, your external world's a reflection of your internal world, or making your bed just helps you get, how you do anything is how you do everything. Number six. Yeah, number seven is sleep. So very concerning with sleep and brain performance. We know when you don't sleep, how's your thinking the next day? You know, how's your ability to solve problems? How's your ability to focus, remember things? When you sleep, if you have long-term memory issues, get a sleep study done. That's where you consolidate short to long-term memory is during sleep. When you sleep, the sewage system in your brain kicks in because there's, you know, energy to do so also as well. And your brain doesn't stop at night. If anything, it's sometimes in ways more active. It's consolidating short to long-term memory. It's cleaning out beta amyloid plaque that can lead to brain aging challenges. Often a lot of the studies show that with a lot of disease, there's a kind of a sleep deficiency component also as well. Sometimes I'll wear a device to monitor it because it's not that people ask the quantity of sleep, what's the perfect amount, 7, 8, 9 hours. It's absolutely not the quantity, it's the quality of your deep sleep and your REM sleep. Your deep sleep, you can imagine, is where you're recovering your body. Your REM sleep is where you're restoring your mind. So seven is sleep, 0 to 10, you know, how much focus, energy, attention are you putting towards it?
We've done stress management, which is, we talked about how stress impacts the brain. Yeah. We talked about sleep there. We've talked about novelty.
The last three really quickly are protect your brain.
Yeah.
Wear a helmet. Your brain's very resilient, but it's very fragile. So I get to work with a lot of sports figures that have post concussions or TBIs.
Yep.
You know, and so we have protocols for that, and obviously see a doctor. 0 to 10, rate yourself. New learnings is big. We talked about the power of learning.
Novelty.
And for me, reading. Reading is to your mind what exercises your body. I think it's the best. People, you get all fancy apps and everything else. I think, look, someone who has decades of experience, like yourself or your guests, and they put it into a book, and you can sit down and read that book in a few days, you could download decades into days. That's the biggest advantage, right? And reading is incredible exercise for your mind, especially the way we teach it. And then finally, stress management, which you mentioned, you know, 0 to 10, how well are you mitigating stress and coping with stress? What mechanisms and tools or rituals or practices do you have? You know, my go-to is meditation.